I was telling someone just before the first service that you're coming to Sunrise feels a little bit like, you know, coming home. If you're getting ready to celebrate 40 years, my first Sunday here was August, but it was August 81, which would be year 7 of Sunrise. Last week I spoke at the church that we left Sunrise to go serve, and I said to them, when we came to you, we'd been married 30 days. And our next anniversary, we'll celebrate 30 years. And so one of the things I'm grateful for is that Sunrise as a community was really a foundation place for me. The college community, I know a few of you were in that college community with me, and you're here today. And those were times that really set the course and laid some of the foundation for my life and for ministry as I went on from there. I serve a ministry called the Leadership Institute. What's the Leadership Institute? Well, it exists to serve leaders. Our mission statement, very simply, is to inspire generations of leaders who listen to God, follow Jesus' rhythms of life, and then lead from the overflow. I meet too many leaders who are trying to lead from half full, or sometimes trying to lead from almost empty. I think sometimes in my own experience, I've turned the Christian life into the stuff I do for God, and the things I say for God, about my output, about my activity. And of course, there are things to do if you're a Christian, aren't there? But sometimes it can feel like the longer I'm a Christian, the longer the to-do list gets. But the Christian life does not begin merely with my activities, but with God's activities, doesn't it? God was up to something far longer and before I began to become involved in anything related to Him. The book that I wrote, An Unhurried Life, the first line of it is, I am a recovering speed addict. And I'm not trying to be cute. I'm not talking about a substance addiction. I have friends who wrestle with those realities. I'm talking about a condition of heart, that kind of speed addict. Are there any other recovering speed addicts in the room? A couple of us? Just three? Is that all there was? A few more will admit to it. You know, I can begin to believe that who I am, Steve talked about identity, who I am is improved the busier I am. If you ask somebody, hey, how are you? And you get a one-word answer back, one of them will be fine, and end of conversation, next, you know. The other answer you'll get a lot is busy, right? How are you? Busy. And often it's sort of said as half complaint, boy, I don't like being this busy, and half boast, am I busy? Huh? Yeah. I'm wanted. People need me. I'm busy. I'm busy. Do you remember Jesus? He said, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. I meet a lot of Christian leaders who don't know how to rest. They know how to receive God's gift of work. They're very good at that. They struggle to welcome God's gift of rest. But work and rest are both gifts God gives, and He loves giving them equally. You don't want to find yourself only opening some of His presence, do you? It'd be like trying to live our life on constant exhale. You can't do it, can you? If you only measure your life by the things you do, the things you say, the things that come out of you, that, yes, I hope will bless people and help people and encourage people and inspire people and whatever, and you don't take in the good things every moment God has for you. The Christian life can begin to feel rather tiring. Remember, Jesus was standing in the temple. It was toward the end of a festival week. And he sort of cried out and he said, "Hey, is anybody thirsty? If anyone's thirsty, he should come to me. Because the ones who trust me, they will be the ones from whom flow," do you remember? "Rivers of living water." They'd become the kind of people who are so full, they are unable to contain what is in them. And therefore, it must flow. And it flows where? It flows to help others. It flows in the form of joy that I can't contain, or compassion I cannot hold in, or peace that doesn't make sense in view of the circumstances, but makes sense in view of the God whose I am. And so it's in that spirit that I want to share with you from a passage. If you've been a Christian for very long, it may be a familiar passage. It's in Isaiah chapter 55. And as I read it, the first three verses of that chapter, what I'd invite you to do is listen to the invitation. Listen for the words in this brief passage that come from God to you as an invitation right now where you find yourself. Whether this has been an exciting and wonderful week, or it's been a draining week, or a very frustrating week, or whatever it's been, these words now come to you from God as a personal invitation. And this is what the passage says. "Come, all you who are thirsty, come to the waters. And if you have no money, come, buy, eat. Come, buy wine and milk without money, without cost. Why spend money on what is not bread? And why labor on what does not satisfy? Listen to me and eat what is good, and you'll delight in the richest of fare. Give ear. Come to me. Listen that you may live. I will make an everlasting covenant with you. My faithful love promised to David." When I listen to that passage, I hear in it the invitations. Four words in particular capture me. And if you've got the notes from your bulletin, you'll know what those four words are. He's inviting us to come, to listen, to buy, and to eat. I just want to spend a few moments sort of unpacking those four words. The first, come. Now, it turns out that everybody in the room came today. The ones who didn't come aren't here. That's called deep insight, in case you weren't sure. You all came to this gathering. But that's not specifically the invitation, is it? The invitation says, "Come to me." God speaking, "Come to me." It's not come to this meeting, or come to that building, or come to this book, or come to that study. Those are all wonderful places to go. But at the heart of it, it's a personal invitation. As I said earlier, we talked about, during the worship time, the whole question of identity. Who am I really? Henry Nouwen was fond of saying that there are some primary ways as a culture we tend to identify ourselves. We identify ourselves by the things that we do and accomplish, or by the things that we possess, or by the things that other people say about us. Let me ask you a question. Do you like accomplishing things? I like it much more than the alternative. Don't you? I like getting things done. I'm a check off the list guy. I love getting to the end of the day and all my boxes are checked. Oh, that just makes me feel so good. Anyone else like that? Yes. Okay. And how do you feel if three boxes did not get checked? Right? Not so much. Not as good a day. Or, I am what I own. How do you like to have things? Any of you live in a thing called a house? Yeah. Did any of you drive a thing here called a car? Yeah. Do any of you have things like these in your pocket? Virtual omnipresence device? Anyone? We all have things. Wearing things. Eating things. All kinds of things. Are things big enough to satisfy our soul? I live in Orange County. And it would seem that down there, folks believe, in fact, the answer to that question is yes. That whereas Jesus said, my life does not consist in the abundance of my possessions, and where I live in Orange County, folks say, actually, I think Jesus was wrong. Because it does. I would be happier if I had the bigger house, or the newer car, or the latest technology. That will make my life better. And by the way, that definition of my identity has a way of accelerating me. Because if I am what I do, then if I do more, I am more. And if I am what I have, then if I acquire more, I am more. Right? But it's a sneaky little trap, isn't it? Because if you always have to do more, and if you always have to get more, how much is enough? See, that sense of identity doesn't even know what enough means. What if, in the spirit of the subtitle of my book, Jesus Rhythms of Work and Rest, what if instead of working to get something, my sense of identity, my sense of value, my sense that I matter, I mean something, what if instead of working to get that, I worked because I already have that? What if instead of trying to get full by what I do and what I acquire, what if I came to my work already full? What if I was the one who responded to the invitation of Jesus, hey, are you thirsty? Go do more things. That'll quench your thirst. He didn't say that. Go get more things. That'll quench your thirst. It won't. Get people to say more good things about you. That'll quench your thirst. It won't. Come to me if you're thirsty. Come to me. And if you trust me, you'll become the kind of person who's so full that it would be as though rivers of living water were flowing from within you. That your life would be an expression of overflow. That you already had what you most truly and deeply needed, and you were coming to enjoy it more and more. And from that place, you could go do the good work that God's prepared for you in that particular day. But you could do it from fullness. Not going to prove something, going to express something. There's an immense difference between those two things. And so these invitation words, come if you're thirsty. You know, a very practical question for you might be, in what ways are you thirsty today? I mean, I'm sort of tempted to hear that invitation and think, oh yeah, I did that. See, it was 1978 in the fall. I came. Check. Now what can I do? But this invitation that Isaiah is extending is being extended to God's people. And the Lord is saying to God's people who have already come in one way or another, keep coming to me. Come to me. Not just come to this gathering, which we love to do because together we enjoy God's presence and community. What a gift that is. But tomorrow morning, when you wake up, to whatever your day holds, come to me. Tuesday afternoon, when you hit that spot where you're a little bit tired, come to me. Be with me. Come to me is the invitation. The Christian life is not a list of things I do. It's a person with whom I enjoy a relationship. We know this, don't we? I mean, here in Sacramento, I don't know how many years ago it was, Billy Graham came through and he invited all kinds of us to come forward. And what was he inviting us to? A to-do list? Were we all given long lists of, you know, tithing and going to Kenya and being in a Bible study and doing all the things that you have to... Nobody gave me that list. At least not that day. I was invited into a relationship. Weren't you? Isn't that what happened for you? I hope. And if that hasn't happened for you yet, I hope you'll enter into that invitation. But we keep being invited to come. And sometimes I've been tempted to turn that invitation into go. My life is just a long list of where I'm going. But wherever it is I go, I don't go alone. I go with Jesus because I'm learning to live my life as a life of coming to Him. And then once I've come to Him, there's a second invitation word, and it's come and listen. Listen, and He says in the text, listen to me that you might live. Shortly after I left Sunrise, I went south. I ended up in a seminary got a degree, and I took all kinds of classes. I took classes in preaching. You may not know that from this moment, but I did. I really did. Trust me. And I took a class on how to share the faith, and I took all kinds of classes on how to speak. There was not one class on how to listen. And I'm tempted sometimes to think that the Christian life is about the things I say and the things he says and the things they say. And instead of, come to me and listen. Would you like to be the kind of person who says things that Jesus would say if he were in your place in that moment? Wouldn't you like that? To be more and more that person who has words of life for people who desperately need it? We become those people as we learn to live a life where we cultivate a listening posture, even in the midst of what we're doing, even in the midst of what we're saying. We learn to have a listening heart even when we have a speaking mouth. This relationship. It was about 25 years ago, and I'd taken this class, and one of the things they were inviting us to do was to follow Jesus' pattern, which is described in one place, Luke chapter 5, verse 16. The line says, Jesus often withdrew to lonely places to pray. I could swear for the first 10 years of my Christian life, that verse wasn't in the Gospels. I don't remember that one anywhere. I remember a lot of other ones. That one I don't remember. That Jesus often withdrew to lonely places? Really? I wonder why he did that. I sometimes wonder, and I don't mean to read into the text, but I just sort of, I'm curious. I wonder if part of what happened when Jesus often withdrew to those lonely places in the midst of the crowd that wanted his attention and in the midst of the followers, his first followers who were with him all the time. I wonder if one of the things that happened was that in those lonely places, he heard again the voice of the Father. The voice he had heard at his baptism. When he came out of the water, John having baptized him, do you remember what he heard? You are my beloved son. Remember this? You're my beloved son, and I'm pleased with you. Do you remember at that moment how long Jesus' ministry resume was? How many sermons he'd preached, or how many people he'd healed or delivered? He was just starting out ministry-wise. He had a carpentry resume. That was pretty impressive. But ministry resume, not so much yet. In other words, Jesus' sense of being a pleasure to the Father, of being a beloved son, a favorite son, was not because Jesus had done so many cool things already. In other words, he received that as a gift before he had accomplished anything. I think one of the hardest things for Christian leaders, and by extension, all of us in this room. I think one of the hardest things to do is to simply trust that I am sitting in my seat now as beloved as I will ever be. Oh man, the arguments in my mind against that. Yeah, but remember what I did or didn't do? I haven't achieved as much as I'd like to have achieved at this point in my life, in my 50s, what I'd sort of dreamed of. Because I'm tempted to think that being loved and being a delight and being pleasing to the Father is something I'm going to earn. It's still out there somewhere. But Jesus knew from the beginning that he went into ministry, into his life, already as loved as he would ever be. So we come and we listen and then we buy. And it's a weird kind of buying, isn't it? He says, buy without money, without cost. Have you ever gone to that grocery store? You go through, you fill your cart, you get up to the checkout counter, and they say, no need for payment. Let's go your way. That grocery store lasts about, 3 days. And that'd be the end of that. So this is an odd kind of buying, isn't it? It doesn't cost us money. It just costs us ourselves. That's all. But what a privilege to come, to listen, and then to buy. Buy is a trust word. The longer I live as a follower of Jesus, the more I realize that one of my greatest needs often is to just believe the stuff I already know. Man, I know a lot of things. I can't even count how many sermons I've heard or times I've sat and studied the scriptures or how many Bible studies I've sat in. Man, I know a lot of things. Any of you identify with that? Any of you ever realize or think about, boy, I know a lot of things. It'd probably help me a lot if I'd trust some of those things. Every time I get anxious, that's one of my go-to struggles. Every time I get anxious, what I'm saying is not just the feeling, but the choice. When I choose anxiety, what I'm saying is, yeah, I know God says that I don't have to worry about anything, but I could really pray about everything and that his peace really would guard my heart. I know that's in the Bible somewhere, but right now, anxiety seems a better go-to. So that's what I'm going to do. I may be alone in that. I suspect not. Or I choose anger. You don't have to drive the Orange County freeways long to have opportunities. As you get on the freeway, you feel like you've entered a NASCAR event. Talk about hurried. I don't know what it's like in Sacramento now. I have a feeling it's probably accelerated a little since I left in the 80s. So sometimes I choose anger. I'm never glad I did when I'm done doing it. Are you? I never get to the end of that thinking, man, what a great choice that was. Man, I'm so proud of myself. I'm sure Jesus is too. I don't buy that I could choose not to be angry. I could choose that God would care for the thing where I felt injured or unfairly treated. That the world in him is a safe place for me to live my life. I don't have to protect myself through those sort of angry reactions. I'm not adding anything to my life or to the world by doing that. Come, listen, buy. Buy is where I learn to bring my thirsts and receive what God has for me. See, our souls, we have no idea how immense our soul is, because it's a place where God wants to be at home. God's kind of big. There isn't a house big enough to satisfy my soul. Or a car luxurious enough. Or any list of possessions that are enough to fill my soul. But I forget that. And I believe sometimes, if only I could accomplish that, or or get that, or achieve this, or get more people to say good things about me, then, man, my soul, whew, boy, that'd be good. I'd be in a great place then. Until the next day when I needed more to fill up that spot. These invitations are invitations to take in the good stuff God has for us. And the best thing God has for us is Himself. Come to me. Are you tired? I'll give you rest. Are you anxious? Prince of Peace. Are you discouraged? I'm the God of eternal encouragement. Are you sad and hurt? I'm the God of all comfort. Where are you thirsty? And where have you been taking your thirsts? Sometimes I take them to places where there isn't any water. I think there's water, but it's more like a mirage. Any of you do things like this? And you get to the other end of it and you say, that was not as refreshing as I thought it was going to be. I'm not nearly as satisfied as the advertisement said I would be. And so again in this text, I'm invited to come, listen, buy, trust, cling, hold on to. And then the fourth invitation word. Eat. Drink. Enjoy. Another word in that passage is the word delight. Doesn't that sound like a nice word? What's the most recent thing you did that was just delightful? Sometimes in my busyness, delight is somewhere out there. We'll get there someday. Right now we can't. Right now we just have to muscle it. Someday delight will come. Actually, come to me now. And now. I came that they would have life. What kind of life did He want us to have? Abundant. What better recommendation for the Christian life than to live it abundantly in the presence of others who've yet to see who Jesus is and what Jesus offers? What an honor. What a privilege. You see, this eating, this drinking, this delighting, this is where my deepest hungers and thirsts meet God's generous goodness. One of the things I like to do most every night, and I've done this for many years, is I'll get to the end of my day, and I'll just look back over it. And I'll try to make a list of 10 ways that I've sensed God's generosity. See, kind of by, for whatever reason, I can tend to be a cup is half empty guy. I can tell you what's wrong with something. It's a gift. You know? This is how this could be improved. This is how that could be improved. So for me, it helps to just look back over a day and say thank you. It's a way of looking back and saying, look at all of the ways in which I experienced delight. I got my favorite seat on Southwest Airlines on my way. The one that has no seat in front of me. Oh, I mean, how can you not say thank you for that seat? But there were just other moments, simple little moments. The Christian life was meant to be a life of fullness, full of joy, full of a sense of deep love. That I'm not trying to earn, I'm not trying to prove, I have it. Because I've come and listened. I've trusted. There's that line in 1 John, it says, and so we know and rely on the love God has for us. Sometimes I get stuck at no. I can even be up here standing and preaching, God loved the world so much. I don't know if He loves me, but I can tell everybody how much God loves them. But right now, where you are in your life, whether you would describe this as a more successful season, a happy season, You would say, on the whole, things are going pretty much the way I hoped they'd go. Or whether you find yourself in a window where this is not what you had planned, things have happened, or you made choices, or whatever it was. And so right now, the circumstances surrounding you are not hooray. And what I'm tempted to do when I'm in those windows is to think, life isn't much right now. So I need to get working. Now, there's truth to that. But the work I most need to do is to come and to listen and to trust and then to enjoy what God has for me right in the middle of the mess, right in the dark valley, right where I'm struggling and wrestling internally, or whatever it is. This place is a place where I could, at the invitation of Jesus, experience abundance. Doesn't that sound good? And that is something that God is extending to you right now, exactly where you are. And so for a few moments, actually not just like 30 seconds, but for a few minutes, the way I'd like to spend some time as a community here is to invite you to be quiet for a moment. There's a line in the Psalms that says, "Be still and know that He's God." I find that's one of the hardest commandments for me to obey. I don't know how to do that. Be still? Seriously? Can you just tell me to go somewhere? Can you just tell me to do something? I can do that. I got that covered. Be still. Because what happens if I get still, well, yeah, physically I'm still. But in here, that's still revving. Often. That's okay. I mean, I haven't found the switch yet where you can go flick, oh good. Nice and quiet inside. Sometimes it just takes patience. But we're invited to be still. Why? Because stillness would be a place where we could remember again who we're coming to. Do you ever pray prayers that are sort of autopilot and you're about three sentences in and you're not even actually sure what you've said? Sadly, this happens to me a lot. So to take a moment and be still and remember who I'm speaking to. I don't have to, for example, when I pray, sometimes I've realized I'm coming to God and I'm informing Him of a situation which had escaped His notice. He was unaware of the dynamics, and I'll give Him diagnosis and certain facts, and then I'll suggest to Him, I think your best course of action would be this. So in my prayer, I have informed God, who already knew, and then I've suggested an outcome which is going to be far less than His creative and wise suggestion. And so maybe prayer could actually become a place where I learn some form of coming to somebody who's smarter than me and who knows more than me and already cares about the situation more than I do and is actually already doing stuff before I thought to pray about it. And I could just enjoy the gift that it is to be in that God's presence and to give thanks and to, yes, share my concern, but maybe just have a little more confidence that He's with me in this. He's already involved. So kind of with those things in mind, I want to just take a moment and invite you to join me prayerfully. And so when you're quiet, I don't know what happens in your mind when you're quiet. Maybe you're thinking about where we're going for lunch, or you're thinking about something kind of noisy in your life. Somebody did something, you wish they hadn't done it, and it's made a mess. Or just kind of a chronic worry that seems to sort of come back whenever you get quiet. Or maybe just something really neat that's happened in the last day or two, and your heart's still happy because it did. See, any of those would be places that we could bring into the presence of God. Places from which we could come and listen and let our hearts trust. And then eat, enjoy, take in. Let our hearts and minds become full. God, as we're still, help us to listen well. As we're still, may your peace come where there's been worry. May hope come where we've felt much more hopeless. May comfort come where we've been sad or hurt. May healing come where we've felt more broken than whole. May fullness come where we've felt empty. And may rest come where we've just been tired. Thanks for the gift it is to be yours, to be so loved before we ever get up and do something to impress you or not impress you. And for these things, thanks. Help us as we move through this day to sense the gift that it is and your presence with us in the midst, we pray. In Jesus' name, amen.